This is an MUT Radio podcast.
MUT executive management that is here with us this morning, and those that might not be here, starting with the Vice Chancellor and Principal, Professor Nogutula Sibiya, and all her executives, and all the directors of units that are here, including our beautiful Professor Mandlini Nkonkeni. Nkonkeni Mandlini. I never know which one is first and which one is last. I think they're all intertwined in one. Also, all the colleagues from universities, the executives of those universities, the vice chancellors, the deputy vice chancellors, the directors of units from all those universities that are here with us this morning. Let me just say all protocol observed, because I know that I am not going to be able to mention each one, but a special welcome and a warm one to all delegates that are here today and that are part of this conference that were with us from yesterday, and they are with us today, and hopefully they would stay and continue to be with us tomorrow. So my job this morning is a simple one, is that I am just going to help facilitate the proceedings of this morning. And our morning session is not a long one. Yesterday, we had two keynote speakers that really touch important points that are really advancing the scholarship of engagement. I think both speakers spoke very frankly about where we are with community engagement in higher learning institutions. And we also, those that got an opportunity to ask questions and give comments, I heard really reflective statements and comments from delegates. I think truly this platform is giving us that opportunity to advance the scholarship of engagement. So without any further ado, to reflect on day one, just to take us through the learnings of the day, I would like to call upon to come to the stage Professor Bonani Nensandama from the University of Venda. Professor Bonani is going to give us the reflections of the day. I'm just recognizing that I didn't even introduce myself. I went straight to speaking. And you're probably wondering, who is this one now? It is Phumzile Xulu, and I am from the Durban University of Technology, and I work in the Community Engagement Unit. So with a big round of applause, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to call upon to come to the stage Professor Bonani Nensandama to give us reflections on day one. Thank you.
The recap, but I would still want for it to be interactive. I would still check what's wrong with the number. And I would really still plead with you to do it throughout the course of the day, because it's important that we all capture the highlights in the spirit of co-creation and co-designing, because what stood out for each and every one of us should at least influence what we do next as engaged scholars. Even request one or two reflections from the floor, even without Mentimeter. With a show of hands, anybody?
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I just want to zoom into the keynote address by the first keynote speaker, Professor Francis. What stood out very strongly in his thought-provoking and insightful presentation was the danger of higher education institutions of finding themselves, which is the case, in that continued colonialism in terms of carrying out research. We are still stuck in that old mode of carrying out the research. And even if we make an attempt to bring in those new concepts of decolonizing, but we are, I'm not sure whether we are aware that we are still continuing with the old model of carrying out research, which is excluding the community voices out there. So that is what really stood out for me. I know that we do carry out research and we go back to our communities and verify our findings. But I think it is too late to do that, because we have to carry them along from the initial stages of our research, from the conceptualization of the problem. The problem, it must come from the communities themselves, so that you are in agreement as a researcher from an institution of higher learning. And then you take them along up to the stage where you realize the results. Even when it comes to the actual publication and communication of findings, the communities have to be there. So that is what really stood out very strongly in yesterday's presentation by the first keynote speaker. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Any other? So the decolonization of methodologies and the efforts that we are making and how much we are making in that was your take home.
Thanks, Jane. I think for me it was, you know, the personal self-reflection, you know, that as critical engaged scholars, first looking at how we behave. We expect so many times people to transform outside, but looking at your own praxis. Because I think especially from the plenary and again, Dr. Francis, the notion of self-agency, that change truly starts within yourself. And then can we demonstrate the type of behavior that we expect in some of these grounding philosophies of Frey and Biko as well? And then also courage. We are caught in a very important historical moment globally and locally. It requires our voices to be amplified in complementarity, not in competition. And then the suggestion, I think, from other speakers are that engagement, critical engagement, can perhaps be the platform where the mandates of the university can intersect in a way to be more responsive to some of these grand challenges that in South Africa are both historical and contemporary because of the nature of our society. Thanks, Jay.
Thank you so much. Any last one?
Thank
so
you,
complementarity, not competition, was one of his key and take home. Thank you. Over to you.
So just a reflection on, I think it was a second keynote, Professor Sizwe Mabizela from Rhodes. I was touched and in fact saddened by some of what was mentioned in the talk, to show the level of, the amount of problems that we have as a South African society, which means we have so much work to do as engaged scholars. Some of us in the universities, staff and students, are not really behaving like example in society, like it is expected. So we have great work to do, and he also mentioned that it is difficult work. And so ours is to really try and make sure that our goal as scholars is to make a difference in society. and to lobby our universities and government to make sure that the work is acknowledged and rewarded. It's not enough to just do the work because we think it is good work and it's making a difference in society, but it must also be fairly rewarded. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Reward and recognition also was key in the discussion, but also, like you're saying, the sentiments of Professor Sizwe Mabusela, and we've got to listen, because of course he was one of those, or he is one of those vice chancellors that have been supportive throughout. So thank you, colleagues, but in the spirit of saving time, I'll just run through the recap as I saw it, but I wanted us to give input. We can still do that. I think we will put up the number for the mentee so that we can open it throughout the day, and then we will share with you the collective recap. And so I wanted to appreciate again Mangosuthu University of Technology and Professor DVC for welcoming us, Professor Annette Mini welcomed us yesterday, and then followed by the Vice Chancellor and Principal, Professor Nokutula Sevia. And as we can see, I just captured the key points. I won't be able to go through everything, but we were invited to come and reflect, interrogate, but most importantly, to reimagine the scholarship of community engagement. Us sitting here as champion, passionate leaders who wants to be part of the legacy of growth and development. Emphasis on social transformation, and also reminding us of the report of the 2012 audit that talked about fragmentation and poor conceptualization. And as Dr. Damon said, the reflective part here is to ask ourselves, how far have we become with these issues of fragmentation and inadequacies or poor conceptualization? I do think we are moving on the right direction. I think Professor Sevilla reminded us of the importance of us learning from other scholars across the board, and reminded us of Boyer, who every scholar here would know about or should know about. Students, I'm saying you have to know Boyer's work, hey? You can't be an engaged scholar and not know that. And of course, a big congratulations, I think we should congratulate MUT again, because SAHSF was started here, was inaugurated here, and yesterday we were reminded of that, and the fact that universities, community engagement, South Africa is again, in a way, inaugurated here. So a big heads up for MUT. the focus on what she then concluded with was to encourage the focus on societal impact, indigenous knowledge, and of course, making sure that community engagement, scholarship is about also not just social transformation, but development in general, socioeconomic and reminded us as well never to forget on publications. You see, I've learned over the years that for us to be taken seriously, we have to understand the game and play it. And so, young ones, publications, non-negotiable. You can't come to the conference, present, and it ends there. It has to end in a publication, and it's hard work. It will require you to be patient and repeat. But we also recognize other forms of publications, not just peer review. We also want to encourage you to look at policy briefs, how to design leaflets and materials that talks and can be understood by communities that you worked with. That's important. That's what we represent as this scholarship, community of practice. So fast forward without getting into details, the keynote from Professor Francis, I think I wanted just to elevate the last part, which was when he suggested from knowing to doing. You remember those strategic pillars that he suggested? And he went into details what that looked like or should look like, but I encouraged you to adapt for your institutions, of course, and co-creations and transforming institutional culture is one big responsibility that we all have here. Policy alignment, knowledge ecosystem, and remember the discussion about localizing SDGs, making sure that they make sense to our backyard. That's our responsibility, and together we can do that. Then followed by a panel discussion with very robust questions, food for thought. I won't dwell much on that, but we talked a lot about recognition, which we also reflected quite earlier, but also talked about unequal status, institutionalization and sustainability, need for framework, and positioning community engagement in communities, in university structures, acknowledging that universities do that differently. It's okay. For me, it's okay. It just does have to be there where it works for that particular university. And we are responsible to educate, to promote, to advocate, and advocate for the principles, not being bogged down into arguments about definition, principles. What is this about? And it's a work that will be with us for a lifetime. Without getting into discussion, I wanted also to just reflect on Prof. Sizwe, because for me, Prof. Sizwe was cautioning us of being the whining nannies, you know, always complaining, always looking at the negative side of things, and actually challenging some of the narrative that we tend to promote without even hearing. You remember he talked about the pillar narrative that he said he doesn't like because it suggests you know, separate poles, and he promoted integration instead. You remember he challenged silos, he challenged dichotomies, and he actually said there are no issues. In many ways, he's saying there are no real issues regarding funding because it's how you do your research, it's how you do your teaching and learning, which I tend to agree with. Because we should, if we want to grow and integrate, like we say we want to do, we should figure out, be streetwise on how to still be visible within the integrated teaching and learning and research and innovation. Be there, show up, and converse for the principles of the scholarship of engagement. So I won't dwell into details, but sufficing to say, these are some of his words: inclusive scholarship, knowledge that serves humanity, local relevance, and he also emphasized the issue of tapping from wisdoms of our elders, our communities. And what I remember him very well saying was that humility, that reminder that we don't know it all, and it's okay. When we show up with communities, with partners, it's okay to say we don't know it all. We know some things very well. That's why we need each other. That's why we need communities in the co-creation. And then, of course, there was the breakaway sessions. I participated in one where mostly students presented, and I'm grateful for that. And I felt my job is, again, to remind students about the principles within the scholarship of engagement, because they can really, if they are aware and they are sensitized about this principle, it's not difficult to start where you can and tweak some of your research objectives and research questions to increase co-creation. I also participated in this workshop from colleagues who were focusing on community engagement through space and place. And we did a good job there, active participation using appreciative inquiry. And again, that's another tool for co-creation that we might want to encourage ourselves and our teams to consider.
Thank you so much, Prof, for that reflections and really capturing the highlights of day one. Colleagues, apologies. We are just over our time that we've been allocated to these first two sessions, but we will try and recover. I'm just being reminded that we have colleagues that are joining us via the online platform. So I don't recall welcoming them as well. So welcome to all colleagues that are joining us virtually to day two of our conference. So colleagues, without any further ado, I would like to call on stage the panelists to have our panel discussion as a second item of our program today. Our facilitator for the panel this morning, we have Dr. Bruce Damons from the Nelson Mandela University. Doc, can you come and with your panelists to the stage, please? I would hand over to you to actually call your panelists. Let's give them a big round of applause, colleagues. Thank you. And I'm also reminded that we now have a timekeeper sitting right in front of us. So remember the colors. I still think we needed a green, but anyway.
Colleagues, you don't get it back now. I hope it's not the gender issue, Prof. Colleagues, on the first panel, could you please come to the stage? So while the colleagues are coming to the stage, let's give them a round of applause. Everyone's awake now. That was part of the prompt of this panel, is to keep everyone on their toes. A very good morning, colleagues. My name is Bruce Dormans. I'm from Nelson Mandela University. Before we start, I'd like to tender a formal apology for Professor Mokoena, who has a family bereavement, and we keep him and his family in prayer. So now, because of my fear developed yesterday for the timekeepers, I'll jump immediately to the brief. So the framing cue, and I'm throwing some colleagues under the bus because I gave them a different cue last night, but we are engaged scholars, so we have to be always on the ready. I want to be provocative with the framing cue and suggest that it's time on the continent and globally that we should move beyond the scholarship of engagement as suggested by Boyer. I am suggesting as critical engaged scholars that we need to move to a form of critically engaged scholarship, which invites us to move from inclusion as an invitation to inclusion as transformation, where marginalized voices and knowledges define what counts as knowledge. Remember, historically, we had knowledges on the margin and excluded. And in South Africa, it even became more complex. And so today, our panelists will share their experience and views on this topic. The process will be each panel will have 5 minutes to share their best thoughts. Then we'll invite the audience, and this is what I'll manage very closely because of time. No preambles today. One crisp idea and one question. If you make a preamble, you forfeit your question. Okay? But that will be so we make sure that we honor time and we give justice to the panelists, and then we'll engage critically, and then we'll have a collective summary of what we've learned together. It was truly participatory. I'll ask you to engage with my recommendations, but because of time and fear of the timekeeper, we move immediately to the panelists. The panelists will introduce themselves, and we'll go from that. We'll honor our student first, and we're so excited that we have a student on the panel. And then we'll move down from the student down, and we'll end with our program facilitator of today. So you have 5 minutes starting now. Can you have the mic, please?
Greetings, everyone. My name is Anela Matiginga, and I am a student at MUT currently pursuing.
Sorry, my dear, to add to anxiety, because I am before computers, and I just shut down Busi's conference now by closing this computer. Can we please allow the technicians to reopen the conference to everyone? I sincerely apologize. My sincere apologies to those colleagues online. We're going to move immediately over to the first panelist, and my apologies again, colleague.
Thank you for the opportunity. And to answer the theme presented to us today, my name is Anela Matiginga, and I am a second year student at MUT, currently pursuing my diploma in nature conservation.
My name is Nomthandazo Mbandazayo. I'm from the University of Zululand. Hi, everyone.
Good morning. My name is Mawethu Nyakacha, Manager Engaged Scholarship at Stellenbosch University.
Greetings. My name is Linda Mbonambi. By training, I'm a town planner. I'm a practitioner. I'm attached to Etegun Municipality.
Colleagues, I've already introduced myself. It is such a pleasure to be part of this panel, but maybe to start looking at the question as posed by our facilitator, looking at inclusion as a transformation. What counts as knowledge? And also looking at critically engaged scholarship, what is that? I think what I can say there is that many a times we often refer to communities as having marginalized voices. And for me, those marginalized voices, they actually what shape knowledge. For me, those marginalized voices that we're talking about, they are what expand what we recognize as expertise. Because the question for me is, who has the knowledge? Who is the knower? And when we go to communities and we're saying that we are researchers, is a researcher has the knowledge? Don't we go there with a question versus going there with an answer? As we come out of that situation with the community, having had the question, having asked the question, and having had the question answered, having that answer as a knowledge, something that we now know. So who is the knower? Who has the knowledge? And I think it's important then having to look at that process, because for me, if we want to define what we're calling scholarship of engagement, it will be that process. The process that informs research. What is it that we wanted to know? The process that then transform our curricula. From what we know, we need to be changing things. And from those things that are changed, we want to see the impact in society. So that's the flow. That's the scholarship of engagement. And for me, that's what we define. So looking then to that process is that who we recognize as experts. And as we, after that process, we get big titles, PhDs and professors and many others. Where does that leave that community? Where does that leave that community leader that you spend a lot of your time? And remember, that community leader was a key informant of your research. Where leave that particular community in that recognition? As you write your paper, your articles, and many other things that happens, where is that community? So for me, that's where my thoughts are at when I look at scholarship of engagement. Thank you, colleagues.
I think it works. Greetings again. There's a bumper sticker that I used to see as a young person. It used to say, Jesus is the answer. And somebody put another bumper sticker that said, if Jesus is the answer, what is the question? So my question for you, Chair, how many people who are here who represent community experience, who come from civil society organizations? Just to get to know by the show of hands, people who come from the community. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. It's very encouraging. I think if we are to talk about critically engaged scholarship for transformation, we need to be mindful that the people that we serve should be counted in policy-making tables. Because if they are not counted, it means their views, their aspirations don't count. So that's where we also have to be mindful about as a condition of enabling critically engaged scholarship. Point number two, we need to be stubborn about working to kill silos. Not silos within faculties and in universities, but silos between government, academia, business, and community organizations themselves. So we need to work together. That collective ethos needs to be the basis for research and knowledge making and knowledge creation. Another part, thirdly, we also have to be very mindful of words. You know, I grew up in Umlazi, went to university, and I discovered that in university, I'm called poor and I'm also called disadvantaged. Now, I come in an environment where I was being told by my teachers that you are a promising student, you know. Now you come here, they tell you that you're disadvantaged. Now, the worst thing that you can do, I say this to our community partners, that is to believe that you are a disadvantage. It's okay as a researcher, as a practitioner, to write a hard-hitting, ironclad proposal for a government funding and make references of disadvantage. But the people themselves do not have to believe that they are disadvantaged, because if you make them think so, even as a scholar, you're not going to be able to take them as a knowledge partner. You will always allocate their views and thoughts in the footnotes of your publication. You're not even going to invite them to be a co-publisher or co-author, as it were. So breaking down silos is very, very important. As I said, understand the advantages that even people, the so-called poor, is very, very important. Understand the capacities they bring into the process. It's also very, very important. How am I doing for time?
You've still got 2 minutes.
2 minutes, okay. Ngugi Wa Thiong'o wrote a very interesting book some years ago. Unfortunately, it wasn't as popular as the book he wrote earlier about language. He called it Moving the Center. We do know that the Western world has created this notion that they are the center of the universe. A scholar aspires to go to a Western university study and they get better recognition, you know? Maybe that's the reason why universities are even battling to have CE as a standalone faculty or unit, because what is knowledge is not problematized, as it were. So I think we have a responsibility of connecting and working together so that we move the center away from allowing universities to think that what only matters is teaching, what only matters is research. Communities are very important. Remember, in a country like ours, the most unequal society in the world, it goes without saying that we have so many people who wake up with nothing to lose. You know, the other day, people marched through Durban under the auspices of Operation Dudula, causing mayhem and chaos. Those people have got nothing to lose. The people who protest every day and break down our infrastructure, our community facilities, our schools, those are people with nothing to lose. So I think CE, as part of reclaiming the agenda of critically engaged scholarship for transformation, should be about getting everyone to feel that in this society, in South Africa, they matter, they count, they are stakeholders, they have a stake in the future of the country, they own this country.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, colleagues. So, I'm happy to be invited in this conversation, which I call Inclusive Knowledge for Inclusive Impact, and then Centering Marginalized Voices in the Scholarship of Engagement. So I'd like to start by just in general terms looking at scholarship of engagement or engaged scholarship, which is often used interchangeably. I already mentioned that my role is to facilitate and support engaged scholarship at a university. So the work is about universities partnering with communities, society, societal organizations to address challenges that are faced by society. So that is in general terms. What does this engagement look like? We engage as university community on the basis of knowledge. Knowledge creation, dissemination, exchange, or application. So that is how we engage. But what is the goal of all of this, which is very important, is to address societal challenges. So the university wants to do that. There was a phrase by, I think it's a political scientist whose name I cannot remember, that goes like, the world has got problems and universities has faculties, which means universities are too siloed in disciplines or faculties or departments. They are too siloed to be able to address societal challenges that are often too complex, that often require multidisciplinary solutions. So this means that we have to start with ourselves at the universities to encourage multidisciplinary approaches if we want to make a difference in society. So it starts from there. The second one is to look at the knowledge. It was already asked here, whose knowledge, who owns the knowledge? We must acknowledge that knowledge is not a sole property of a university. That there are other knowledges that especially marginalized communities, they hold rich experiences, traditional knowledges, indigenous knowledges, you call it. And those can change how we understand and solve problems in society. So we need to acknowledge that. Transformations come from that for me. That the knowledge that society, communities are holding can transform us as academics to understand and be able to approach societal challenges better. And if we do that, as academics, we will engage or approach communities as knowers and not just as subject to be researched or to be consulted or to be passive participants in the process of knowledge creation. So if we acknowledge that they are also knowers, they are holders of rich knowledge that will transform us as universities, then it changes the power dynamics. You may ask, how do we do that in practical terms? I mean, you create intentionally platforms where communities are invited to be part of the decision making, to be involved at the very beginning of projects, and then you move together with communities throughout the process of knowledge creation. So for me, scholarship of engagement is about that. And that is inclusive knowledge. It is involving those voices. And only by doing that, you will have inclusive impact. Make an example how we do it at Stellenbosch. Okay. Just quickly, we start by having like orientation session where we invite academic, student, and community partners and explain the principles of scholarship of engagement so that everybody knows. This allows the community to be able to approach the university because it works better when the problem is identified by those that live it and feel it and come to the university and the university response. Let me stop from here and hope that we can engage further on this. Thank you so much.
Inclusive knowledge. Inclusive knowledge, I view it as an end goal. That's where we're aspiring to get to one day. We're not there yet. It's a very complex journey. Obviously, there are opportunities. There have been achievements, policy framework, and the establishment of movements, I'll call it a movement, such as Community Engagement South Africa. That's an achievement. But let's look at the marginalized voices, as the previous speaker said. It is deliberate. It's a very deliberate effort, supported by the system. Mm. The system that has a language, English language. So if you grew up in communities like Nkandla, like myself, and only see, I used to see a white person that speak English once in a year when I go to Melmoth, then you understand that the language excludes you. So secondly is the process. We have processes. So when you talk about indigenous languages, the critics of indigenous languages, I like them when they say, who validates that knowledge anyway? So we have processes that support the exclusion or whatever that you call marginalized voices. And then the third one is resources. Oh, there's a lot of money. There is a lot of money that is defending the system, defending the exclusion of knowledge. Do you want me to give you an example? Let's look at the simple issue, teenage pregnancy, a dilemma for everyone. So we have big organizations such as NFP, the UN, pumping billions of rands. Take your Google and check. Billions of rands. It goes to contraceptives, encouraging young people as young as 12, 4 to take contraceptives. We have comprehensive sexuality education that is being taught in schools to promote the uptake of contraceptives. Okay, let's look into the other side now. Look at in the very big movement, very popular in KZN, Ukhlolwa kwezintombi, virginity testing. Who supports that? How much money that goes to virginity testing? None. We have taxi industries these days that support that. So every time if they Google Nomhlanga, then you will see the taxi industries will actually contribute some money for that. And is there any study that looks at the resilience of Ukhlolwa kwezintombi? Why that movement is very strong and it's getting popular, it's getting stronger by the year. No one bothers even to check the resiliency behind that. So once again, I'm saying to you, it is complex. The inclusive of knowledge is complex. And the efforts to exclude knowledge is very strong, supported by the language, resources, and processes. One, let's look at now, us now, looking at now the academics that we say, we talk about the inclusion of knowledge every day. And it gives a hope when you hear people talking about the inclusion of knowledge in this. You're like, wow, something is going to happen. I work in the community engagement department. So when I ask, we will hear academics saying, I have a very good community engagement project. Nomthi, I want to talk to you. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm quite excited. Let's talk. I want to teach communities about chronic diseases on food safety. Then I'm like, oh, you want to teach communities. You want to teach. Can you analyze that? I want to teach communities. What does it tell you? This person is talking from the position that I know. I misknow it all. I'm there to teach. We're still not serious and committed at our efforts to co-create. We're not ready to co-create knowledge with our communities. And I remember when I was working for this big clinical trial. There's a global clinical trial on hormonal contraceptives and HIV and AIDS, looking at the association. So when I was asking, when I was like, I would love to engage the civil society, then I was told, Nomthandazo, you need now to start behaving like a researcher now. And I was like, I didn't know that I'm supposed to behave and act and speak the certain way. So what do we do if we were to be serious about the inclusion of knowledge? One, we need to interrogate our own belief system about the inclusion of knowledge. Secondly, we need to celebrate the little shift because, as I said, it's very complex. Thirdly, we need to make an enabling environment for the knowledge co-creation and very serious about forging sustainable partnerships, not hit once. You go to the community, they will never see you again until you need them. And then secondly, move away from this thing that when you invite communities because you're coming from the university, that they need to come, even if they have something important. But if you invite them, if they invite you, you know where to be fine. That's one thing that tells us that we still have a long way to go. Thank you so much.
Oh, colleagues, these are out of order now, ne? These are totally out of order. There was no applause given for anyone. Now you start applauding.
Can you please withdraw your applause until everyone's done? Okay, thank you for your cooperation.
Thank you for the opportunity. To me, inclusive knowledge means recognizing, valuing, and integrating the knowledge systems lived. To me, inclusive knowledge means recognizing, valuing, and integrating the knowledge systems, lived experiences, and and worldviews of people who have been historically marginalized or excluded in academic spaces. This idea connects directly with humanizing engagement, whereby community members are treated not as data sources, but as equal partners who has their own agency, expertise, and dignity. It also aligns with decolonial praxis, which knowledge is more prioritized and works to shift power relations between communities and universities. Through this lens, community engagement will move from doing engagement for communities to doing engagement with communities, creating a more respectful and collaborative foundation for meaningful knowledge making. So in context of the field that I am in, which is conservation, back in the days, communities were isolated when it comes to, communities were isolated and not allowed in reserved. They did not only isolate the communities, but they also took their voices and knowledge about conservation. Through the organization that I am part of, World Connect South Africa, I have learned that genuine community engagement means listening to communities, whether we approach them proactively or we respond when they call us. We do not come in assuming that university training, makes us the expert. Instead, we value the lived experiences of people who have cared for the land for generations. So as a student, I have learned that marginalized voices play an important role in shaping what we understand as real and valuable knowledge. In class, we learn theories and academic ideas, but when I engage with communities, I see that people's lived experiences explain things in ways that books cannot. For example, community members notice when seasons are changing, which plants and animals are affected, and how daily activities contribute to environmental challenges. So this knowledge gained over many years helps me see environmental issues in a more realistic and human way. One challenge I face as a student is balancing academic knowledge and community knowledge. Sometimes what we learn in class can be too general or rigid. Where else community knowledge is more flexible and context specific? This has taught me to listen carefully and value different perspectives. It has also shown me that learning is a two-way process. Student and community members can teach each other, enriching both academic understanding and local practices. I believe universities can improve by creating more opportunities for students to learn directly from communities. This could include inviting community members to speak in classes, developing joint projects, and formally recognizing experience as a form of expertise. When we value these voices, the scholarship of engagement becomes more inclusive, practical, and meaningful. So through my studies and my work with World Connect South Africa, I have Okay, through my studies and my work with World Connect South Africa, I have shown that marginalized voices are essential to understanding the world. They remind us that real knowledge comes from listening, engaging respectfully, and learning from people's lived experiences. By recognizing and including these voices, we strengthen both learning and conservation practices, making engagement truly relevant to the communities it serves. Thank you.
You are forgiven for this one. We will accept. Let's give the whole panel now a lovely round of applause. And I know who's my keynote speaker at my next conference now on Engage Scholarship. You just fantastic, critical entry into thinking from the perspective of students at whose behest we say we stand in front of the space. But listen to the articulation. Well done, MUT. The floor is yours. Chris, comment, question, first round. And critique. This is a community engagement. There's something that didn't resonate with you. Stand on your word and one in a very crisp moment, not in the preamble, and then the question. You get someone, just get them. Okay, you want to use mine? And I'll use the, I'm so scared not to disconnect in the conference again.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks to all the panelists. I just want to comment on the point that was raised by my colleague from Stellenbosch University, where you really talked about the challenge of universities that are too much in silos. They're not speaking to each other in terms of I could say one university, make an example, but it's different faculties and we're not speaking to each other, whereas the societal problems out there are quite complex and they need that multidisciplinary approach. Coming from MUT and having been in that space for...
Which is the program organizer, can say move to the question now?
Yes, that's a question now that I have. The question that I have, in fact, is the concern, because I have seen the passion from the academics at MUT. They love community engagement. They carry it out, but the system does not allow them. The timetable doesn't allow them. So if Mr. Nyakacha could advise us, what can we do so that we can dismantle these silos? I was talking to Prof. Msomi behind me to say...
No, thanks.
Thank you, Chair.
Baseline. You scientists now, we have a baseline, eh?
Yes.
Not too good. But short, fortunately, it's Busi, so we can speak to her. But thanks so much, Busi. Chris, and then comment. Chief, you. And two, three.
Thank you so much, Chair, and I will be very brief. I just appreciate the contribution by the panel, but just one comment. I think from my experience as a social worker many years ago, my name is Bongani Mzinyane from UKZN. One experience, when I was working, I'm commenting on the point that was raised by you, Sis Nomti, from MUTS, from Unizulu, I'm really sorry. Yes, on the issue of virginity testing, I once engaged this lady who was actually part of that virginity inspection, and yes, virginity inspection, and she corrected me that we don't virginity testing. Instead, we inspect. So that was just very enlightening to me. And it's part of something that I really carried from her. It might not be generalized to all communities, but she said, this concept of virginity testing was actually imposed. And I even remember when I now... It is just a comment. Thank you so much.
And that's what we do. We can share knowledge as well. Thank you for that clarification. We go there, and then that end, and then we're going to allow our colleagues to respond. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Joseph Norman Khatebe. I will be straight to the question. Who drives community engagement? Who must drive that? There is minimal engagement about the developmental part of community engagement. As I'm seeing there, it's community engagement and development. But throughout the session, we are more emphasizing on a scholarship aspect.
So the question is clear. Don't answer your own question.
Yes.
One question only.
Yes.
I'm mindful of the politicians in the room. One question.
Chair, you're distracting me.
Yeah. Who drives community engagement? I heard the
last
question.
No, last question.
I know. Take the mic, bro. The one question will come around. I just want to be fair that we get this in life.
Okay.
And the voices. You'll be the first one in the next round, sir. Yeah. Colleagues, we have to be fair. You see, so give everyone a chance. There was from CPUT. You got the questions and comments, and we'll give a round of response.
I suppose to add on to Prof. Busi about systems and university systems. So yes, we invite our communities onto our university campuses. We entertain them. We have dialogue and so on. But for me, the challenge is when we try to bring them into some type of employment or remuneration system. The same with the co-publishing, when we try to, research with our community partners and government, and they don't get part of those subsidies that we get in higher education. So I think there's a lot of system changes. The academic qualifications versus the University of Life qualifications. I think I would like to know how can we advocate to make these systemic changes happening where we talk the talk of acknowledging knowledge from all sectors, but when it comes to those kinds of teaching opportunities for our communities in our classrooms, what do we want them to do it for nothing?
Brilliant.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. And thanks. Give a round of applause for the first round of questions. They were very good in setting the baseline. Colleagues, you can choose to which one you respond in, eh?
So
you have to respond to all one and then pass around.
I'm responding on the issue of how do we go around the issue of silos. So the structure, the support structure of community engagement of the university can enable you to be able to address silo. How? So if you have an office that is central, that has an oversight of what's going on at the university, and then when you have funding that support community engagement work, when academics approach your office to apply for funding, you influence that proposal and say, there's another group, there's another academic sitting somewhere else doing similar work. So you encourage collaboration that way. Because they don't know if they are sitting in faculty A, they don't know what is happening in faculty B. And yet they are trying to address the same societal challenge, but maybe at different sites. But you can do that. The other one of how do we also remunerate community partners? We have done that. We workshopped young people from the community in terms of data collection so that they can go back to their own communities and do surveys. And they were paid the rate that you would pay students of the university. So sometimes it just needs you to be creative.
Hi, I will be addressing the issue of who drives community engagement. In my work, I work a lot with municipalities. I love municipalities. And there's one thing that I've learned. I've learned of district development model. Beautiful, beautiful. So the district development model was actually established in 2019. It is a platform which actually brings together like national stakeholders, provincial, as long as local stakeholders. It is a platform that sort of like coordinates and integrates community development efforts of different stakeholders. So recently we were working with at King Gojai Municipality. Those that you understand King Gojai, there are five local municipalities there. So then we're looking at what can be the key areas of collaboration between the university and the municipalities that are where we can use to develop activities. And then later when we were engaging industries in the very same communities, they were like, we cannot work with UniZulu alone because we belong what we call the DDM. So now, which is a platform that helps us to not only to engage municipalities, but also to engage industries and communities, civil society organization. So in a nutshell, who drives community engagement? Community 11, everybody. It's a multi-stakeholder effort.
Anyone else would like to respond?
Okay. Yeah.
The response is also Chris, please.
Sure, thank you. I'm also going to give the municipal experience because I live in the Belle of the Beast. Building on the previous speaker, in KZN, we have something called Operation Sugumasake. Every month, a councillor is supposed to host a meeting where communities can come in and share their issues. It could be challenges, issues where they require support. It's not the only forum that exists, but this one is very much important because it's linked to the DDM process. So, in a nutshell, what we are learning is that for creating standards and coherence, you do need a central champion institutionally in an organization. However, make community engagement everybody's business as well, because you don't want it to be something that only one person does, but it's a value system. It's not the nice thing to do, it's the right thing to do.
This will be our wrap up because I've been threatened with a card here. You'll just give a comment as well, and this will be regarded as the wrap up.
Thank you very much for the questions. I think all of them have been answered. Just maybe a comment also on the virginity testing. I think it just go back to what my colleague was saying about it, that we pay so much attention and we give so much attention to Western practices, and we leave out our own. And understanding our indigenous practices and doing research and having a better understanding of these practices is important. And it requires the same level of attention, the same level of support, and the same level of resourcing as we do others. I think that it's just both to that, because that will then give us the information and the knowledge that we are needing in understanding these practices. Thank you.
Thank you for your question, for your questions. To answer the question that says what drives community engagement, I think in MUT, as what my lecturer has previously told me, is that community engagement is mandatory in our department. Like, every lecturer needs to have an organization that gives back to the community and run projects that benefits community members and students. Thank you.
Wonderful. So, colleagues, thank you so much. And thank you so much for indulging and that we could finish on time. So I'll just summarize to take the notes that I made from the inputs and from the feedback. The first thing that we have to think of is our role in relation to society. We are a stakeholder in society. We are not the stakeholder. So we are a stakeholder like the municipality, like the NGO. And that knowledge, I think if we can clarify that for ourselves, that we should be a citizen, not the citizen when it comes to knowledge. How we navigate language and the vocabulary that we use is still informed too much by our theoretical and historical past. And we must have a language that invites and co-powers. I heard from Jiva, not empowers, co-powers. Co-powers, not empowers. The implication is there that we're learning together and we're sharing. I learned that from my colleague the other day. Whose voices are around the table? And how do we ensure that the spaces we create are enabling for those voices to articulate their best proposition? We have to dala what we must. Move away from this mystical languages of ontologies, epistemologies, oxologies. We must bring the skeften and the dala into the mix, because those are languages of our people. And how do we make process? How do we engage our thinking through the knowledges, as the students say, that are there? The languages that are there. Not one person chose to be brave and speak in the vernacular of their mother tongue, because as Africans, we are very accommodating. But shouldn't we be encouraging that as well? Knowledge is a process. It's not an event. It's not going to change overnight. It's a generational process. What are we doing in the generational process? We recognize that there are still sites of struggle. Bureaucracies are not aligned yet effectively to support the way we'd like to do our work. The work is not neat. It's not in a straight line. It's all over the show. Are we comfortable with that uncertainty when we do our work? And at the heart, it should be inviting. Are we promoting epistemologies of the South? Epistemes that speak to our own being, who we are as human beings. We heard about the baobab tree yesterday. We know about the calabash from our university. Are we still worried about Boya so much? What about the calabash? We are the scholars that gives life to that calabash. Yes, Boya is in form a good theoretical foundation. But where's this fantastic knowledge in its organic form? And resources. We have to be... Oh, thanks. Again, my PC comes into place. Colleagues online, my apologies for not having invited you. You'll be the last if you want to add anything. Our resources, we've learned from the municipality, we have to start working in a complementary way. We must not try and outdo MUT when it comes to a conference of this nature. How do we build off? Fortunately, I don't have the resources MUT have, so I won't be able to come close to them. But how do we build off this learning so that our next engagement, whether it's at Univen, is then a follow-up of this and strengthening of the discourses that we have around community engagement? And key to our episteme is, how do we celebrate? How do we rise and celebrate and say, viva the community engagement of South Africa, viva! You see, you lost your voice of struggle, because you think you are in a place, and when you raise your face, your fist in power, it's almost as if you are ashamed to raise your voice in power. I think our generations are watching us. Our generations have marched with us. Our generations expect us to demonstrate beyond the rhetoric of those mystical words that we write. You know, we write away from people, not to people. And the more chom-chom it sounds, tell my students, don't write chom-chom to me. Look how you have to, you can't grab your voice when you read their work. How are we sharing knowledge? Because the essence is knowledge. How are we using artificial intelligence now to help us translate the work into ways that can be accessible to multiple communities as well? These are the challenges I think the panel and yourself set. So thank you so much. Oh, online, is there someone online that you'd like to add?
Oh, sure.
There's no end. So colleagues, let's give our panel now a wonderful round of applause and yourself for a wonderful engaging session, and enjoy the rest of the conference. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to Dr. Bruce Damons for facilitating that very engaging panel discussion. Let's give them another big round of applause.
This is an NUT Radio podcast.